instructions.
Well, you know, I'm not buying all this, but I'm nodding my head, and I'm thinking, yeah, okay. Okay. And he says, you know, the big deal is, he says, there's no fences here. There's if you want to leave here, he said, you're perfectly free to leave. But, you know, he said, I'd stick it out, make your commitment, and stick it out and see what happens. And he said, if you go home and you decide that you want a drink, that's your decision. But listen to what they have to say. Do that for yourself. And I did. I made that commitment, and I made it to myself. I remember while I walked around up there, it was pretty small. It wasn't anything like it is now. But it had the lodge, the main lodge, and they had little cottages spread around. And I'd walk from the lodge out to Highway 8 and back, and I'm thinking, you know, you can change your life, but you can also change things for your family. You know, your kids are never going to have to see this. Your kids are never going to have to go through this. They won't have to go through what you experienced. This is going to be completely change your life and the lives of your kids. And I believe that. We'll talk about that later. But I did at the time believe it. All I know is that that's what it was like for me. There's a lot of things that happened to me, but it would really be boring to tell you. I mean, it wasn't very exciting. It was shameful. It was just crazy, drunken living. And I'd have to make up part of it because most of the time I was blacked out at the end. So but believe me, I qualify to be one of you. And if you don't believe it, you can get a paper back in those days and it'll show you that I did. It was, I was very, very grateful. I met four people while I was up there. One of the guys I was in treatment with, and then three other men. And they were all from the Uptown Highland, Uptown group of AA. And Ollie Skellett, Bob Weber, Joe Osborne, and Adolf, I think his last name was Adolf, and he used to be the civil defense director. Four very, very nice gentlemen. Joe Osborne, I think, was, they're all dead, so I can use their names, and they were very, very nice men. Joe Osborne, I think, was born in a three-piece suit. I don't think I've seen him in anything but a three-piece suit. He owned a monument company. So it was, you know, but the nicest guy in the world. And so they were talking in I had the coffee shop. My job was the coffee shop at Bethesda. I ran that. And so they were having coffee one day and cookies or whatever they were having. And he says, where are you from? I said, I'm from St. Paul. He said, where do you go to meetings? Well, I said, I don't go to meetings. I said, I just came here. I said, I've never been to any meetings. Oh, he said, we'd like to invite you to our group. He says, we're the Uptown group, and we meet on Cleveland and Grand. I said, I know where that is. And right up the street here, when I was a freshman for my only sophomore or my only semester in college, I got an A on Kaufman's Bar over there in the bowling machine, right on Grand in Cleveland. So I remember I got home on a Friday night, got a ride from somebody from Fellowship because my wife didn't drive, and so they gave me a ride home. He was coming down here. And I said, Uptown, do you know anything about Uptown? Oh, yeah, it's a very fine group, he says. You'll like that group. So, okay. So after dinner that night, I said, I have to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I said, I haven't been to one yet, and I was supposed to go to one when I was in treatment, but my mother and father came up to sit down with the psychologist and myself, and I said, I have to go to a meeting. She said, okay. So I was still taking the bus then. And I took the bus down to Cleveland, and I got on Grand to Cleveland. And I got off, and I think I sat there for about 15 minutes looking at that door. You know, my God, do I really want to do this, you know? And I'm just thinking, you know, can't drink the rest of your life? I couldn't believe that part of it. And so I finally walked in, and Joe Osborne met me, and he walked up, he shook my hand, and he said, sit down and listen. And that's what I did. And I did that. I don't think I said anything but hello and goodbye to people for the first 4 weeks. I just listened. And they're a wonderful, wonderful group of people. And I think more than anything, Hazelden gave me hope. It just opened my eyes that, you know what? There is a different kind of life. And I read the books, and I went through the steps, and I did jump through all the hoops. But the one thing that was really hanging me up was my age. I could see the spiritual and mental anguish that I'd gone through. But I had a very difficult time the first 6 months accepting my age, I guess. My physical part of it, the physically addicted, you know. And then I'd think about it and say, well, God, you know, how many people black out for 2 or 3 days, you know, and how many people get in their car and never know that they were in their car. And I'm just lucky I never killed anybody. I had a very difficult time the first 6 months of my AA career with my age factor. But those people, those guys, most of them were guys. We had 3 women, very nice, and older women that were very helpful. In my life, they got me jobs. So one guy, Joe, got me a job later on, a year later when I wanted to change jobs. He helped me get a job, and they were all so helpful to me that the AA to me was just more of a, it's a bond. I mean, there was people there that would do anything for me. I mean, if I was late for a meeting or something, my God, they'd call the house already to see if I was okay. You know, I mean, I'm still waiting for the first call from the bars I used to hang around in to say, is Stan all right? You know, nobody called. It's been a while. So I was just very, very helpful, grateful for that, you know, that of all the friends that I met and what happened. Charlie, I think, used his common sense, and he let me go a while to AA before he introduced me to Calyx. And I remember one Saturday I got a call, and he said, what are you doing tomorrow morning? And I said, well, I'm going to church. And he said, well, do you think, would you like to go down to church at the cathedral with me? I said, sure. He says, well, I have to go early, he said, but I'll have somebody pick you up on Griggs and Summit. He said, you'll be there at 7:30 and somebody will pick you up. I said, okay. And so I was standing on the corner in Griggs and Summit, and big old Cadillac pulled up, and window comes down. You stand? Yeah. Jump in. And I'll tell you what, that Pat Butler picked me up to take me to my first Calyx meeting. And he introduced, he says, my name's Pat. Oh, I said, I know who you are. You do? I said, yeah. I said, I saw your picture on the wall at Hazelden. I said, they think highly of you up there. And he was quite a guy. But all those people, that all of our former members, you know, Bob knows a lot of them. And they were all, I mean, we used to have meetings like got over 100 people. And I'd been over to Minneapolis. My brother used to go to the Minneapolis unit that was at St. Mary's Hospital. And Chuck, I think, went to both of them. But that's when he introduced me to Calix. And I went to Calix for quite a while, and then the only time I ever got away from Calix is when I was working Thursday through Sundays at the store, running the store. And I tried to get there once in a while, but it was pretty difficult at times. But I missed it. Calix brought my spiritual life back to life. That's what it did for me. And I hadn't been going to church on a regular basis before I went up to Hazelden. And I remember the guy, one of the, Big Al, they called him. He was the kind of the grounds guy up there. He took care of everything. And he said, I got a job for you on Sunday mornings. I said, okay. I says, what do you want? And he said, and every morning, actually. But he said, I want you to, we have two priests here. He said, and they take turns saying Mass at St. Bridget's. And he said, I want you to drive in, drive them into town, you drive them into church, and then on the way back, pick up the milk at the dairy. We used to pick up our own milk. I said, okay. So I was driving him to church, and just great guy. Father Joe was unbelievable. The other guy was a real young priest, and I think I remember one day he was walking down to Highway 8, and I kind of caught up with him. I said, you know, Father, there's something I want to talk to you about. He says, you know what? Just leave me alone right now. He says, leave me alone right now. I got problems of my own. And I thought, God. But, you know, what honesty. I mean, you know, that was great. But Father Joe was quite a guy. And he was a traveling preacher, actually. He used to give, go out and put on, like, I don't know, not retreats, but, you know, just three-day missions or whatever it was. Quite a guy. And I remember the last day I was there at Hazelden, he had me come into his room, and I knelt down, and he gave me his blessing. And, you know, that really meant a lot to me. I don't know how long he lived after that, but he was quite a man. He was in his late 70s, I think, and not doing too well physically, but quite a guy. But, and then Charlie, he'd call me, and we'd go to Wilmer and put on meetings at Wilmer, and we'd go to 12-step calls, and I never said anything. I was just the second guy there. I'd drive with him and scare the hell out of me when he was. How is he going to talk this guy into going? God, that guy would end up over in the hospital in Minneapolis. I didn't know how it worked. So I used to go with him a lot, and he was quite a guy. And then after Charlie, that was my friend Jim Cummings, who last year would have had, or this year I guess it was, he would have had 53 years in the program. And he was very beneficial to me also. So I've had some very good sponsors. And I got a good one now, but he's in Fargo. And we kind of sponsor each other. We're classmates in high school, and he's just a real dear friend. So it's been that's been a pretty good run for me. And all this time, I was thinking about my kids. By this time, I've got 8 kids now. My youngest daughter is 29. She'll be 29 in October, and she's getting married in October, by the way. But that promise, you know, that promise that I made to myself and how it was going to change the cycle, it just doesn't work. 7 of my 8 kids are in this program at some level, from 24 years down to maybe hours, I don't know. My one daughter's having a lot of trouble right now, but my youngest daughter's got almost approaching 3 years, and they're at all different levels. And I want to talk a little bit about Al-Anon, because Al-Anon really made the difference with me and with her. I retired in 2003, and Ann was having a lot of problems. It's just a beautiful girl, and I just thought, God, what, my wife and I would say, well, what can we do? I said, well, I'd farmed out all the rest of them, you know, because I always heard, you know, don't deal with your own kids. Let somebody else take care of them. And I've always done that. But I told my wife, I said, you know, I've got the time now. And I'm retired. And I've got the time to deal with this situation. And I think I'm going to take care of her. And boy, oh boy, was I a failure at that. I wasn't doing very well with that project. And I was really, really frustrated. And I thought, there's got to be a better answer than this. And I just by chance picked up the book. I got the book, Lois Remembers. And it's Lois's story. And I learned a lot about Bill in that book, too. And but I thought, boy. And it made me also appreciate my wife a lot more, what she went through. And I read her book. I thought that was a great book. Jim gave me the book. He said, oh, you like this book, too. It's an Addict in the Family. That is a terrific book. And then I read, what was it? The Codependent No More. That was one of them. And then, I'm trying to think of it. It was... Adult Children of Alcoholics. Somebody mentioned it today in one of their talks. You know, not only did it, you know, that book answered so many, gave me so many answers about my life. Adult Children of Alcoholics. If you're from an adult family of, you know, adult children family or something, or it's an amazing book. I mean, it's over 28 years old. But that is an amazing book. It answers a lot of questions for you and gives you an opportunity to really change your own life. But I read that book, and then I thought, well, you know, I had a sponsee that his wife was very, very active in Al-Anon. She passed away, and almost not quite a year later, he passed away. A great guy. And but when they died, after he died, his kids came over to the store one day when I was working and had a big box, and I said, we want you to have these. And they were all his AA books and Al-Anon books. And I've given away most of them, but I had two Al-Anon books. So I thought, you know, I'm going to read that Al-Anon book. And so I tackled the Al-Anon book. And I'd been to a couple of meetings of Al-Anon when my kids were in treatment and I was in family week or whatever it was, and they recommended, two of them recommended I go to Al-Anon, one recommended I go to an adult children meeting, and I said, where is that? And he said, it's at Highland AA meeting club, and I said, oh, yeah. I said, I know where that is. I said, I go there every week. He said, oh. He says, you should try a Saturday morning meeting, 10 o'clock. And I says, okay. So I went to that, and I read that Al-Anon book, and I thought, I'm going to give this a shot. So I told my wife, I said, Sue, I said, I think I'm going to start going to Al-Anon. Well, she says, you know, that's good. She says, I was wondering when you were going to come to that conclusion. You know, my wife has always let me kind of travel at my own speed. I was wondering when you were going to make that decision. And so that's what I did. And that was a little over 3 years ago. And that program has been very, very beneficial to me. It taught me a lot of things. And the biggest thing, there's a chapter called Detachment with Love. And that to me was something I needed very, very much. I mean, there are not too many people that get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and get dressed and drive into town and drive around their daughter's apartment to see if she got home all right and pay her rent and, you know, buy her groceries. But I was given the thing that was really hung up on, I was giving her a ride to work because she had hit a little pole and did something to the front end of her car and she couldn't drive it. And I wouldn't give her the money to fix it. And so I was giving her a ride to work. And I went to pick her up one day, and I'm sitting there, and I was early, and it was 15, 20 minutes before she came down. And so I'm driving out Lexington, and which is the city street. And she's kind of looking at me, and she's, you know, she says, you're going to have to go the freeway if I'm going to get to work on time. Oh, I said, what? I said, listen. I says, oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I said, you know, I've made a decision. You've got 2 weeks to find another way to get to work. I don't know if a ride, if it's your car, whatever it may be. 2 weeks. I'm done. I said, I've been going to Al-Anon, and I've learned that I've been enabling you all these years, and I'm through with it. And she said, okay. That's all she said. Okay. Well, it didn't end there. You know, she kept it up for a while, but I didn't drive into town anymore. And I just started taking care of myself, making my own decisions, and let her live her life, and whatever happened, happened. It's hard. It's hard with boys. I mean, I've done it with sons, but it's terribly hard with girls. I didn't want to do that. I was afraid, fearful. You know, what's going to happen to her some night when she's out? I thought, what could happen to her? I mean, I knew it could happen. I'd read it in the paper every day. And it just, I was fearful of it. But I was hopeful. And then one day, I think she got involved with a friend of hers. She was driving this friend with her friend out to Idaho, I think. And the girl had a truck, and she was driving her car behind it. And he said, you know, either you're going to have to stop and sleep, or you're going to have to take your depression pills, she says, because you're jumping all over the truck. She says, and she's, well, if you don't like it, you can get out. And she says, well, stop at the next town. And so she dropped Annie off in some little town in Montana. And I got a call, and Ann said, well, I'm at a bus depot here, and I'm taking the bus to Minneapolis, and would you pick me up there? And I said, sure. I said, what happened? She said, I'll tell you when I get home. It was an interesting story. But anyway, we got home, we were driving, and she said, I'm ready. I says, you're ready? Ready for what? I'm ready to go to treatment. I said, okay. You serious? I said, yep. So she made the commitment, and I got a friend of mine that had a little treatment home up in Scandia that houses 10 women and all women counselors, and that's where she went, Rachel's house, and spent their 28 days there or whatever it was, and she got out, and I don't think she was home 2 days when she fell flat on her face and called me to pick her up. I picked her up. I brought her home, and I went to the phone, and I called the Roseville Police Department. I had her taken to detox. 2 days later, I got a call, would you please pick me up? I said, sure. And I went downtown to pick her up, and she said, I'm so sorry. I have no idea what happened. I says, I know you don't. I said, you're just like me. You're just like your grandma. You black out. You don't remember nothing. And I said, besides that, you're not listening to them. You're not doing what they told you. You didn't go live in a sober house. You didn't follow their instructions. How many AA meetings you've been to? She just sat there, and we got in the house. And God, she went upstairs and came down, and she says, I have an appointment tomorrow for an evaluation just a sit down with the people that had this sober house. She moved into that sober house. She got a job. They have to have jobs. Got a job. Started paying off her bills. And was doing very, very well. At about 9 months, she said, you know, I think I'm at that point now where I can be off on my own. And I said, okay. I said, but you know what? I said, why don't you talk to your sponsor? I didn't say yes. I didn't say no. I said, why don't you talk to your sponsor? Yeah, I better talk to Sue about that. And so a couple of days later, I didn't hear anymore. I didn't hear anything. And she said, how's the house going? Oh, fine. She says, I've decided I'm going to stay there for 3 more months. You know, I did make a commitment for a year. I said, yeah, I know. So she stayed. Now she's got three jobs. She's got most of her bills, I think all of her bills paid off except her student loans that she had accumulated for a couple of years. She's doing very well. She's going to have 3 years in October. She's going to get married in October. You know, so this program works. Al-Anon works. AA works. And I'm very, very, very grateful to be here. I know Calyx works because I use Calyx. And Calyx improves my spiritual life, and it gives me direction. You know, my wife and I, we sit out on that porch now. We're all alone, and it's, you know, when you have 8 kids, and they're all gone, and it's quiet, and you're sitting on a porch, nothing to do but read, it's nice. And I owe that. I owe that to this program, these programs, all of them, or I'd never have any of it. So thank you for listening, and I hope you come back next year. Thank you.
We also have a parting gift for you, Stan.
Oh, buddy. I'm over here. Get him so you can get your picture.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thank you very much. Thanks, Judge. You've done a great job.